quickly. The triumphal entry actually happens in Luke chapter 19. So it actually happens before what it is that Di spoke to us about last week, with Jesus being betrayed by Judas and by Peter and by the disciples. And so all the way back in 19, in fact, that was where we were the week before when we looked at the parable of the 10 minas. And so there's a triumphal entry, and Jesus is arrested after he's betrayed in chapter 22. And then in chapter 23, first six verses, he's sent to Pilate. And so what does Pilate do? Well, he does what any good government official does. He works out what he can do with Jesus that involves as little stress and work for him as possible. So he sends him off to Herod. So Jesus gets taken to Herod in verses 7 to 11. Herod hopes that maybe Jesus will do some magic tricks for him. Is disappointed. Jesus doesn't do that. Decides to send Jesus back to Pilate. And in verse 13, we have Jesus back again. And Pilate actually uses that in the sense that he says, I haven't found anything for which this man is guilty of, and neither has Herod. Look, he's been sent back to me. I still haven't found anything wrong with him. And so in verse 14, he says to the crowd, there is no basis for your charges. There's no basis for your charges. And yet in verse 18 of our text, it says that with one voice, the crowd says, away with him, release Barabbas to us. Now, I guess that really brings us to the question, who is Barabbas? And so that brings us to our next slide, which really is just that, who is Barabbas, or who was Barabbas? And we're going to go to the next slide now. It's a party, isn't it? We're just moving along here. Because we're going to find out a little bit about Barabbas. Now, in the time of Jesus, as in all biblical times, names are incredibly important. And this is what Barabbas means. It means son of the father. Now, I don't know if you've heard that before, if that takes you back a little bit. But it's not what we expect, really, that Barabbas, this common criminal, we're often led to believe, is actually named son of the father. Not only that, though, but according to some texts in Matthew's gospel, some of the early manuscripts, it gives us Barabbas's first name. And it's a very common first name in the time of Jesus. And it is, in fact, Jesus. And so Matthew 27, 16 to 17, and depending on your English translation, it won't say it, but in some it does. It calls him Jesus Barabbas. Now, Jesus, as I assume you're probably aware, means to deliver or to rescue. And so what we have here is somebody whose name means the son of the father who will rescue. Now, please note that on the slide, I've put it in red. Now, I've done that for two reasons. One, it's so that you take note of it and that you know that it's important to what I'm trying to say. But secondly, red is nature's warning color. And so it's also telling you, this is David telling you something. You really should proceed with caution and work it out for yourself. But from the best that I can ascertain, Jesus Barabbas means the son of the father who will rescue. So that's a little bit not what we expected necessarily of this common criminal. But as we go on, we see that there's more to the story of Barabbas. First of all, and the story of Barabbas actually comes up in, I think it's all four Gospels from memory. Some of the information I've got here comes from looking at more than one. It also comes from looking at the original text in the original language and looking at different translations. But in some, it says that he is notorious. Whereas in some, it simply says that he is notable. It's a little bit like the difference between being famous and infamous. It just means you're well known, but it depends on whether you're well known for good things or for bad things. According to the Romans, he was probably notorious, and we'll see why in a minute. But to the Jews, he was probably quite notable. In fact, he was possibly a bit of a hero. One translation I looked at referred to him as a robber, but he's not a robber at all. In fact, he is somebody who led an insurgence, or if you like, an attempted revolution against the Roman Empire that was ruling them. He was essentially a freedom fighter. He was somebody who was fighting for the freedom of the Jewish people. The texts also say that he was a murderer. And if you murder people, you murder people. Murdering is bad. That's wrong. Just hear that really clearly. But it's interesting to note that in the original text, it makes it very clear that the murders that he committed, or the murder singular, it's hard to tell, was actually in the at the time of leading the rebellion. It was a part of the insurgents. And so it's not that he killed innocent mothers and their babies necessarily, but rather that he killed people in the course of a rebellion, which means they were probably Romans that he killed, and even more likely than that, that they were Roman soldiers. He murdered people in what he would have seen as an act of war. And so once again, in red, I've put down there at the bottom for you something that's important. It's a conclusion I'm making, but it's also in red, so proceed with caution. That Barabbas was the son of the father who endeavored to rescue the Jews from their oppressors. Now, just for a second, stop there and think about whether that reminds you of anybody else in this story. Surely it does. Jesus, who is the Christ, was also the son of the father who endeavored to rescue the Jews, the people of God, not simply from their oppressors, but from themselves, from the situation that they, that they were in. And so it's interesting looking at Barabbas. And if we go to the next slide, thanks, Ben. One of the things that I've always assumed is that Barabbas makes a really good gospel story. Now, I don't know if you've heard of the Christian singer Nathan Tasker. He actually grew up local to where we are. And so some of you may even know the Tasker family. I don't know. But Nathan, on one of his, it's either his first or second album, wrote a song called Barabbas, or Call Me Barabbas. And it was all about that way that we use Barabbas as a gospel illustration. This idea that I am a sinner, just like Barabbas, and yet I go free. Jesus was innocent, and yet he doesn't go free. He ends up paying the price that allows me to go free. And so you can see that the story of Barabbas makes a really good gospel illustration. But I want to suggest that there's more going on here, and I'm not denying that Barabbas makes a good gospel illustration, but I wonder if there's more going on. You see, Barabbas is actually the leader that the people wanted. And this is why I wanted to look at this on Palm Sunday, because Palm Sunday is when we remember that people seem to choose Jesus as the leader that they wanted. And yet in a matter of days, they've changed their mind. Now, in some ways that shouldn't surprise us, because as you look through the Gospels, there's this reoccurring message that comes through that Jesus keeps trying to stop. And that is the message that he is leading a revolution that involves picking up a sword. That's going to involve force. And so even just a few hours before his time here with Pontius Pilate, Peter has picked up a sword and he's cut off the ear of one of the guards that has been sent to arrest him. And what does Jesus do? He says, no, 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 put down your sword. And he actually heals the ear of the man, or one of the guards, who has been sent to arrest him. And so the people have a choice, don't they, about who it is that is going to lead them. And here, Barabbas appears to be a leader that the people wanted. He's going to take up the sword to carry out the revolution. Now, once again, in red, so it highlights a point that I'm trying to make, but it might be dodgy, okay? This one really, really might be dodgy. Kids in the time of Jesus possibly played with Barabbas action dolls. Possibly. I can't see many reactions from that. I hope you're listening. Anyway, because your warning bell should have gone off at that point. Anyway, so, you know, just the idea of a Barabbas action doll, complete with sword and dagger, grappling hook, rope, and spear available at Extra Cross. If you go to the next slide, thanks, Ben. I actually found out that you can get a Barabbas action doll. It's limited in its ability for action because this particular model is Barabbas doll with hands tied behind back, which was the common sort of pose of Barabbas in the New Testament as we understand it. If you go to the next one though, thanks Ben, I have used my very good drawing abilities to give him a spear so that you can see that he's action Barabbas at that point. But in case you're sort of still a bit skeptical, next slide, Ben, we actually find out that there's been a Barabbas action movie. So there you go. Barabbas is actually this figure that the people of God, or the Jewish people at that time, saw as being attractive, something that interested them. And so it's a choice for the Jewish people between two heroes of the people. But they're heroes with very different styles to their leadership. Thanks, Ben. If you have a look at the two different styles, they're very, very different. I have once again in red, because maybe I'm going too far with this, but it's almost like the people are doing what they did in the Old Testament again. The people are choosing a king. But not only that, they're doing what they did in the Old Testament, because in the Old Testament it was made clear, God said, I am your king. And yet in 1 Samuel 8:20, they say back to God, we want a king over us, to go out before us and fight our battles. And that, as it would seem to be the case, is exactly what they thought Barabbas would do, because that is what he had done. He was the sort of guy who would go out and fight the battles for the Jewish people for them. But there's two different styles of leadership here, isn't there? And I want to look at some things that really highlight the difference between those two styles. Thanks, Ben. The key difference is that Barabbas believes that he can take by force. He's a murderer, as I said. And the idea that human life might be a cost is something that he considers it's a cost that just needs to be paid. And so for him to kill some Romans along the way to freeing his people is okay. That, I would suggest, is very much a worldly way of thinking. And yet Jesus is a very different leader, isn't he? He's not a leader who takes by force. Instead, he is a leader who exercises a loving sacrifice of his own life so that others can go free. That's kingdom thinking. It's fundamentally different to worldly thinking. And it's interesting, look at the two of them, Jesus and Barabbas. Only one of them actually seems to have a problem with the Romans. And it's not Jesus. If you look through the Gospels, I challenge you to find a time where Jesus actually condemns the Romans who are oppressing the Jewish people. He doesn't. He does certainly condemn some people, but it's not the Romans that he condemns. And so the question for you this evening, thanks, Ben, is which do you choose? And in some ways, who it is that you choose, or what style of leadership, or who it is that you choose to be, means that you're going to end up looking like Barabbas, or you're going to look a little bit like Jesus. And so which one is it? One of my favorite authors at the moment that I'm enjoying reading is Pete Scazzero. And this is one of the best quotes, I think, that I've found from Pete. It's quite simply that a genuine relationship with Jesus results in a morality that makes us softer towards others, not a morality that makes us both harder and superior. It's a ripper of a quote. If you're connected to Jesus, then you're going to grow to be somebody who is softer in the way that you relate to others, not harder. Not superior, especially morally superior or harder. And I think Peter is reflecting what God says. God says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. God says, my way is the soft way. My way is the way where I'll lay down my own life rather than take yours to get what I want. And it's interesting that Jesus never seemed to go after the Roman leaders, but he did go after the religious leaders of the Jewish people. Because if you look at the religious leaders, you look at the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they had become morally hard and superior to those that they were leading. Those that they were shepherding is the word that is used. They'd become very hard on the people that Jesus came to seek out and to save. They were particularly hard on the blind, and as we looked at earlier on those who had leprosy, those who, for whatever reason, were seen as being unclean or being sinners. Those people, the religious leaders, gave them a hard time. And so Jesus gives them a hard time. He goes after them, but not the Roman Empire. the Roman Empire is simply being and doing what the Roman Empire is and does best. Religious leaders shouldn't. So how does Jesus manage to keep his calm in the face of everything that's going on in this story? So Di talked to us last week about the betrayals that Jesus went through. It's not just that. There's the false accusation and the trial that he goes to with false witnesses. There's the ridicule that he is exposed to. There's the beatings. There's the betrayal as well. And ultimately, there's a crucifixion. And yet, in the midst of all of that, Jesus manages to keep his calm. He keeps choosing the gentle way. It's the way that some people believe is foolishness, as Paul says in Corinthians. But it's the way of God. The stakes are high, and yet he seems to have a peace about him. How is it that Jesus does that? Well, I want to suggest something that's very scandalous, because I think it goes against the way that we usually think about this. And that is that I don't think he manages to do this because he is God. Yes, Jesus is the Son of God. Yes, he is fully God as well as fully man. But I don't think he manages to keep his calm at this point because he is divine. I believe he keeps his calm at this point because he is fully human. Thanks, Ben. Now, that's for a second might take you back a little bit. Surely it's the human side of Jesus that is the problem. It's certainly the problem with me is my human side. In fact, that's the only side I have, and that's a problem. But one of the things that we fail to remember is that when we were created by God, he looked at us and he decided that we were, and particularly mankind, were very good. What that means when it says in the original language, very good, and some translations put it as perfect, is that we were made just right for the purpose for which we were made. We were able to fulfill the purpose for which we were brought about. Now, we're not like that now because we're fallen and broken. Whereas Jesus, well, he wasn't fallen and broken like we were, but he was fully human. And it's an important thing to realize, because one of the things that we need to realize sometimes, I think, is that there is a true self within each one of us that we were created to be, that because of our fallenness and brokenness, we failed to be. Jesus didn't come, and I hope I'm explaining this clearly, Jesus didn't come so as to show us how it is that God could live a perfect life. He came to show us how it is that somebody who was fully human could live a perfect life. We, outside of the fall, were designed to be able to live that perfect life. And so that's a key point to remember. If you go to the next slide, Ben, because one of the things I think we tend to do at times is look at Jesus like a superhero and say, well, Jesus did this because of his superpowers. And yet there's fundamentally a difference. There is a fundamental difference between Jesus and myself. Yes, he's perfect and I'm fallen and broken. And yet the things that we see in Jesus ultimately are what humanity should look like, if not fallen and broken. So he's not like Superman or Spider-Man. Spider-Man's a good example. Jesus was not bitten by a spider that gave Jesus superpowers to be able to die on a cross for us. No, he died on a cross for us because as a human, we were all created to lay down our lives for others. That's how we were created to be. So I realize that's a hard concept maybe to understand, especially when we hold it with some reform things like the total depravity of man. The thing is to remember that you and I are totally broken, unable to fix ourselves. But we can learn from Jesus here something that's really valuable for us to learn, which if we just put it down to his divinity, we maybe miss the opportunity to learn. So to be fully human is to be like Jesus. And if we have a look at how Jesus lived, then we can maybe step into or see how it is that we can step into being more like Jesus and becoming softer rather than harder. So have a look at, and some of these things, there's a list here, and a lot of them actually come from just from the one chapter in John's Gospel, John 14. But Jesus trusted the Father. He spent time with the Father. He gave thanks to him. He served him, obeyed him, spoke to him, listened to him. We're told that he was in the Father. That's the connection that he had with his Father, and that the Father was in him, and that the Father worked through him. And that's probably really important to note, that the Father worked through him in his full humanity. And so Jesus walked this life as a human, but he did certain things that for some reason we often think we don't really need to do to walk a life like his in some way. And when we fail, we just usually put it down to the fact that, well, he's God and I'm not. But Dallas Willard says something really interesting, and I've got the quote here. He says that his central claim is that we can become like Christ by doing one thing, by following him in the overall style of life he chose for himself. What activities did Jesus practice? Such things as solitude and silence, prayer, simple and sacrificial living, intense study and meditation upon God's word and God's ways, and service to others. Some of them will certainly be more necessary to us than they were for him, because we're broken and fallen, because of our greater or different need is how he calls it. And if you have a look at some of those things relate to how Jesus describes his own walk with the Father. Dallas Willard goes on to finish by saying this, and it'll come up in a second. Thanks, Ben. So if you wish to follow Christ and to walk in the easy yoke with him, and so notice Dallas Willard is still using language that Jesus uses at this point, who says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. He says, we will have to accept his overall way of life as our way of life totally. Then and only then, we may reasonably expect to know by experience how easy is the yoke and how light the burden. So Dallas Willard actually sets us up with a bit of a challenge. If you want to look a little bit more like Jesus, he would say there's things that you can do that will help you on that journey. Next slide, thanks, Ben. I want to say straight up, and maybe this should be in red as well, when you think about the question, what is it that you can do to be more fully human? There's a couple of things to remember. And one is that it generally appears to be a process for us as fallen and broken people. But also, it doesn't ever come to completion in this broken world. Because of the influence of the world that we are in, that's probably the simplest way I can put it, the influence of the world that we are in, we will always remain broken to some degree, being in a broken world. But gee whiz, I get a lot of encouragement from Jesus' words in John 14 when he says, I tell you the truth, anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. That's a big statement. And then he says, and he will do even greater things than these because I'm going to the Father. And a part of him going to the Father is so that we could all have him dwelling within us in and through his Spirit. And so I want to finish up with a couple of more thoughts. This is a quote from Gerald May. It's from a book on leadership, Christian leadership. And I often want to use quotes that talk about leadership in church. And I assume that that puts some Christians off because they think, well, I'm not a leader. I'm just part of the congregation. But I think every single Christian is called to be a leader because every single one of us is asked to be salt and light in this world. And that's leadership. And so this quote, I think, is something that we can all look at, and it applies to what we've been saying, that spiritual leadership, or if you like, Christian discipleship, springs forth in grace from our very desire for God's presence. And this, I think, is really helpful. He says, this does not take effort or striving. In other words, just trying harder to be like Jesus isn't going to make it work. Instead, he says it takes a lot of courage, because it asks us to show up and to be attentive to God. And that's sometimes the hardest thing for us to do. In the middle of the coronavirus and everything that's happening, I've listened to a lot of very anxious people, people who are very stressed and people who have realized that things are out of their control. Well, you've got a choice. You can try and work your way through that as hard as you can to bring control back for you. I would suggest that that's the way of Barabbas. Or you could choose the way of Jesus, the way that is a softer way. It takes an awful lot of courage, but it involves simply showing up to God and asking, what do you want me to do in this situation? Do you want me to be still? Do you want me to wait? Do you want me to reach out? What is it that you would have me do? Well, I think as we just sort of close this up and think about this week, how is it that you're going to show up this week to the Father? How is it that you're going to turn up and check in with him and have that posture where he's the one who is directing you, where it's you that find yourself in him and ultimately you therefore find that he is in you? How are you going to show up this week? And the list that I've got there of things to think about is the very list that I had before of the things that Jesus did, because they're the things Dallas Willard would remind us that we should think about adopting if we're serious about living like Jesus, of being able to be in a pretty intense situation and yet not pick up a sword, instead reach out and heal the person who has come to arrest you. And so there's things like trusting in the Father, spending time with him, being thankful to him, serving him, obeying, speaking to him, listening, being in him and having him work through you. I guess my final thought with all of that is, as you think about that and think about what it is that you could do this week to be found in him, I just want to remind you that this week we're going into Easter. This week is the week where we are remembered, I imagine probably more than any other week in the church calendar, that Jesus has done everything required for you to be adopted, for you to be his son or daughter. Jesus was fully God, yes. He was also fully human. And he knew that he was the beloved son of the Father. And that identity that he found in his Father was key to who he was. So I want to encourage you, will you make that key to your identity this week as you are reminded of what Christ has done for you? Will you just remind yourself, allow God to remind you, that you are his son, you are his daughter, that you are his beloved, and that he has a sense of pride in you and who you are. May that encourage you to do, I guess, amazing things, not in your own strength, but in the strength of him who works in you. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this incredible story of Jesus Barabbas and Jesus Christ. We thank you that just as the Jewish people made their choice, we also get to make a choice. Lord, help us to realize that the choice that we are making is external to us. We're choosing Jesus, who is outside of us, and yet we're also told that we're choosing an identity that is within us. Lord, help us, I guess, to follow through with that choice. Help us to keep turning up, being attentive, being courageous at times, to keep showing up and keep coming to you. And as we do that, please change us. Please shape us and mold us. Lord, help us to be used by you, that we might serve you in this world, that the world might not be a harder place because we are here, but rather it might be a softer and more loving place. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, David.